This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. HeartWiseMinistries.org is a busy place. You've got videos to watch, radio programs to listen to, and blogs and books to read, as well as detailed and very up-to-date information about building and maintaining optimum health. It also has a place where visitors can leave questions for the pool of doctors who address them. That will form the foundation of our show today, answering some of the questions that visitors have left on the site. Our guide to the answers is Dr. James Markham, founder director of HeartWise Ministries. Dr. Markham, welcome to HeartWise.
Thank you, Charles. I want our listeners to really understand that, you know, we talk about a lot of healing that goes on, whether it be through diet or connecting with our Savior or our Lord. There is a place for modern medicine. And in these questions, I think we can help our listeners understand, you know, a little bit more about modern medicine and the appropriateness, when to use it, when not to use it. And I think these are great programs for me. I enjoy preparing for them because it helps me be up to date on what's the latest in modern medicine. I can look at the trends, see what I think is true, what corresponds with biblical teachings, and what just makes sense.
I like that. And to start our conversation, how does one look for answers online? I mean, I've often said, if you want to scare yourself to death, start listing your symptoms online someplace. Trust me, you won't sleep well after you do that. What's a hurting, fearful person to do when facing the great unknown of illness?
It's hard, and you know, you want to go to your doctor, see what they have to say, and hopefully you have a good physician that can guide you. And then you want to learn what you can on the internet, but not get scared to death. WebMD is a good site. I'm happy to answer questions on our website. That's heartwiseministries.org. And we've got some of those questions have come in today. A lot of people just need reassurance as well. And Wikipedia seems to be a fairly unbiased source. I always worry about someone that's trying to sell a product. Usually if they're trying to sell a product, a supplement, or some procedure that hasn't been evaluated, I'm concerned about it. Usually the studies have shown that they're really not useful. And some of the studies that come from pharmaceuticals have not been shown to be useful. And realize modern medicine is best used to treat you for a short period of time to get you over a hump. So if when you're reading something, it's able to get you over the hump and teach you how to do something so it doesn't happen again, that's probably good sound advice.
But
if it's something that's perpetually coming back, it might not be.
Okay, here's question number one, and this is a little challenging for you here, I'm sure. What is diverticulosis, and is it dangerous? It sounds dangerous, Dr. Markham.
Diverticulosis is a great question. Let me just sort of make that simple. Think of diverticulosis like those out pockets in a basketball or tire when the encasing grows weak. So the encasing of the bowels grow weak, and it sort of pooches out. So when it pooches out, that's called diverticulosis. And actually, parts of the bowel push out of their enclosure, just like a basketball. Now, because of their many bacteria, trillions in the bowel, there's a higher chance of certain bacteria sort of hanging out in that, and there's a higher risk of having an infection. That condition changed from diverticulosis to diverticulitis, okay? And it's a dangerous because if that infection in that pocket gets too big, guess what? The bowel might break, and then that infection might get into the peritoneum. And that's a very significant infection if these pockets rupture, spilling the bowel contents into the abdominal cavity. Now, that's really a medical emergency. Of course, the treatment for diverticulitis is antibiotics, okay? And the symptoms can be severe abdominal pain, cramping, bloating, all those type of things. And it's a growing problem that we didn't have to this degree 100 years ago. And there's many explanations. Well, one is we have increased pressure in the tube. Well, why is that increased pressure? Well, we push our stools hard through the system, and this pushes out on the bowel. So what would cause that? Well, a lack of fiber and water contribute to this. So if you don't eat lots of fruits and vegetables and fiber, you're at increased risk for diverticulosis. Now, they looked at some studies from Uganda where they have tons of fiber, and the autopsy findings them showed almost no diverticulosis. So that's one thing that will help a lot. So one thing you can do to help yourself, lots of fiber, drink water. Animal products seem to change the bowel flora, which makes that worse as well. And some people might help them if they don't eat well to take a probiotic. So that's what diverticulosis, a weak area in the tube that's more prone to infection.
And you're saying this can be treated successfully?
Yes, it can be. If you catch it early, you can treat it with antibiotics. And you really want to keep those pockets healthy and not get infected. And the way you do that, lots of fiber. We recommend a plant-based diet. Lots of water. Avoid chemicals that damage the bowel flora. Mm. We know that animal products damage the bowel flora. Mm-hmm. When the bowel flora becomes unbalanced, certain ones might hang out in these different out pockets, triggering infections, which is called diverticulitis.
All right. Very good. That's our question to heartwiseministries.org. Here's another one. Number two, I have inflammation in my left knee. Is there anything I can do to improve the knee?
Inflammation could be a sign of significant structural damage. Hmm. So you want to make sure you haven't pulled a ligament, broken a bone, and that can usually be done by visiting your doctor. He can do some x-rays if needed. He can do an exam. If something's physically torn or broken, that's a whole different approach than what happens mostly is the wear and tear of life. Okay. Mm-hmm. One of the best treatments for inflammation is rest. You know, if I broke my arm and it was inflamed, I wouldn't keep throwing baseballs. I'd put it in a cast and rest it. So one thing that a person can do, any part that's inflamed, try to get more rest and not do anything that makes it hurt. Pain means that inflammation is pressing on the nerves, things hurt. So rest is a good way. Hydration and water always helps with inflammation. We now know that there are some foods that help with inflammation. One of them is ginger. Some people like ginger tea. Some people put it on their food. We now know that there's another root called curcumin, which comes from turmeric. You've heard of those things.
Yes.
I put it in my oatmeal in the mornings two or three times a week, and I think it helps with my inflammation that I sometimes get in my feet. Mm-hmm. That's another way to help with inflammation that's natural. Exercise appropriately and physical therapy, if it's done where it doesn't cause pain, helps by strengthening the ligaments, improves the bloodstream around that area, which can also help improve inflammation. So there's lots of little things like that that can be done to help inflammation of a knee. But first, make sure there's nothing structurally wrong. If something's broken, they might need to set it, put it in a cast for a while. Of course, if you've pulled a ligament that's you know, an anterior cruciate ligament, it tears frequently. There's a whole different approach to that. But for wear and tear that's done chronically, those simple things might help a lot, Charles.
Now, you mentioned the word pain several times here. Is pain a good indicator? I mean, I've heard people say you work through the pain, you walk it off, you just don't let pain stop you. You're saying let pain stop you, am I right?
Yes, God gave us pain to tell us something is wrong, okay? Mm-hmm. If you're having pain, something is wrong. The degree it's wrong is the question. You know, if I'm having pain in my chest, I'm worried about a heart attack. Mm-hmm. If I'm having pain in my head, I'm worried about things going on in my head. Well, pains in the legs, unfortunately, people don't worry about as much because you're not going to die from it, yeah. Okay? Yeah. But if it's something serious wrong and you continue to use it, you could put more pressure on it and make things worse. So listen to your body. If you're having pain, maybe you should back off, get it evaluated by a professional. You can work through it, or maybe you shouldn't work through it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is it possible for pain to be false, to give you false indications where something else is going on and we think it's pain?
Yeah, sometimes your brain can trick you, and people that are under lots of stressful situations, they can have pain in all sorts part of their body. And what happens is the brain can cause the muscles to constrict and hurt. We have a condition called phantom limb pain, where you get a part of your body cut off and the nerves still produce pain. So a lot of pain that's false pain actually comes from our brain, where the brain is misinterpreting signals and we think there's pain, but there's really not pain. Mm-hmm. So this needs to be evaluated, but it's more of a rare type of situation. Most of the time a person's having pain, there's something wrong, Charles.
All right, very good. We'll take a short break now. When we come back, the next question has to do with the heart. And I think Dr. Markham is primed and ready to answer that one. He's a cardiologist, founder, director of Heartwise Ministries. And again, the website for Heartwise Ministries is that, heartwiseministries.org. So everybody stay right where you are. We shall return momentarily.
Did you know that last year in the United States, over 4 billion prescriptions were written? Prescription medications seem to be the most popular treatments these days. But what can we do if we want to limit our exposure to prescription medications? At Heartwise, we recognize the importance of nutrition in treating and prevention of disease. Dr. Hippocrates stated, "Let food be thy medicine." Many evidence-based studies support a whole food, plant-based diet. But how is this achieved in the fast-paced world we live in today? We want to encourage those interested in this type of treatment to watch the documentary film Plant Pure Nation and visit the website plantpurenation.com. This is a great first step towards helping yourself move towards better health and helping make the world a better place. Visit plantpurenation.com to start your journey today. That's plantpurenation.com.
It's time for a HeartWise Health Break. I'm Charles Mills. In his book, Medicines That Kill, HeartWise Ministries founder-director Dr. James Markham spoke of a transforming time in his life when science and faith began to merge. He writes, quote, "I began to see a convergence taking place, a coming together of two elements, biblical theology and science. As scientists gained the tools necessary to peer further and further into what makes life possible, I found that my faithful Bible began to make more sense. It was as if modern researchers were seeking for proof to verify what my Bible teaches. This merging of science and Bible changed the way I regarded Scripture and launched me on a search for healing that continues to this day. I realized that for the first time in history, science wasn't refuting Bible truth, science was proving it," end quote. To learn more about gaining and maintaining optimum health, visit heartwiseministries.org. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today, Dr. James Markham, founder and director of HeartWise Ministries. I always love talking to this guy because he comes at disease and healing from a biblical standpoint, and that's rare today. That's unusual, but it really shouldn't be unusual because God designed us and created us, and now he has ways for us to be well and bring healing into our lives. We should not be surprised or shocked when Dr. Markham says, well, God says, or the Bible says, well, why not? He was our designer. And let's see if that works for this one right here. Dr. Markham, we're talking about questions that have come into HeartWise Ministries. Here's one. I recently had a cardiac stent. What are the complications? And the question I want to ask, is there anything in the Bible, anything that God says that might keep us from having to have a stent put in the first place?
Yes, there's lots of things in the Bible that helps us not to need a stent. And that's almost the whole program. But a stent basically is a stainless steel metal device, usually coated with something that prevents rejection, that's put into the artery and actually squishes the blockage against the arterial wall. So now more blood flow can get to a muscle so the muscle can get the blood flow that it needs so it won't be compromised. Uh-huh. When would a stent be needed? If I'm having a heart attack, pain that won't go away, I want a stent. Because if you don't put a stent in and the artery's blocked, that muscle's dead. So if you can get that artery open, usually within 5 or 6 hours, you can prevent permanent muscle damage. Uh-huh. That's when I would want a stent. Another situation, if the artery is so blocked up in a high-risk location, person's having lots of chest pain, can't exercise, can't do things, that's another time when I want a stent. But remember, Charles, the stent treated a symptom and not a cause. Mm. And the cause was cholesterol, fat, all this complex buildup in the arteries, which is a very complex situation that's caused by diet, food, lifestyle, genetics. It's not a good thing. So there's tons of biblical prescriptions for that, including food and stress and all of those good things in the Bible that help will prevent that. But what are the complications of a stent?
Yes.
Well, they ask specifically, well, the complications, the stent damages the blood vessel. And whenever the blood vessel's damaged, even though it was a needed damage, the body tends to turn on chemicals that make it clot. Mm-hmm. So people that have had a stent have to take blood thinners, things that prevent the blood from clotting. Usually they take two of them for about a year, especially for a drug-eluting stent, and then at least aspirin for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. That's one complication. Another complication that I've seen with stents is sometimes stents, when it causes its damage, it turns on inflammation that goes throughout the entire circulation. And sometimes a blockage that's not so bad can get worse over time much quicker if the body says, I've been damaged. Because the body, the inside says, you know, I've been damaged. Let's send a bunch of cells over there to fix the damage. Unfortunately, those cells can cause more inflammation, more clotting. A plaque can get worse over time. So actually, stents in the first at least year, I follow the patients very carefully all over the body to make sure they're not having progression of vascular disease in other places. So a person that is on a stent, they also have to take medicines which makes the blood thin. Another complication of taking all those medicines is bleeding. They have to be very careful with nosebleeds, very careful when they brush their teeth. They have to pay attention to their bowel movements, make sure that's not changing, especially if it's black. That's a sign of internal bleeding. If they're urinating, it's a dark color. That could be a sign of bleeding in the urogenital tract. Nothing is free. Whenever we have a treatment, whether it be a pill or procedure, there's always risk associated with that. And we have to balance in modern medicine the risk versus the benefits. And stents, just like any of those, it has its risk and it also has its benefits.
You have to be careful brushing your teeth?
Yeah. Well, after you've had the stent, remember you're on two blood thinners.
Yeah.
And the blood thinners block platelets, which cause clotting. Because we want to protect that stent, which is turning on clotting.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes, yes.
And a foreign object in your body, it wants to clot. So, you know, if you cut your hand, the body's going to want to clot. Well, when a stent goes in there, that's some type of damage to the arterial wall. It's going to want to clot that. And it takes a while for the stent literally to get a coat of endothelium over that stent so the blood doesn't see stainless steel, which is a foreign object. So taking those antiplatelet agents, if you have a little brushing your teeth too hard, have a little bleeding in your mouth, a little gum disease, a little bit, it doesn't cause bleeding. But when you do bleeding, it's much harder to stop the bleeding.
Wow. We're talking with Dr. James Markham, founder, director of HeartWise Ministries, and we're answering questions that have come into the heartwiseministries.org website. Question number four, should I take an ACLS, Advanced Cardiac Life Support class? They are always changing the guidelines. So I hear this person saying, you know, if I took the class, if I took it a month later, they're saying, you know, what you learned then, it's changed, now it's different. So why should you take one?
Well, I'd say the answer to that question is yes, okay. The reason is it can help save a life, okay? And for instance, you know, a tragedy happened in Chattanooga just this week. Yes. You know, we had a young person in a pool that all of a sudden they had a cardiac arrest, okay? Well, many times there's not anyone to help. And the nice thing about at least knowing how to do some advanced cardiac life support is you can do something, you can help. You can't hurt somebody that basically has a heart problem or their heart has stopped. You can't really hurt them. You can only help them. Mm. So, you know, part of our duty on earth is to help where we can.
Sure.
So the answer to that question is yes, I think people should do that, especially people that work in the public. We know that healthcare providers really need to do that. Now, how does it look different now? You're right. It always changes. And basically right now, it's gotten much simpler, Charles. When you find someone that's down, okay, what you have to do is call for help and then start doing chest compressions at 100 to 120 compressions a minute, okay?
That's pretty fast, actually.
Just do that basically as fast as you can for 4 minutes. Call and see if you can get a defibrillator there as quick as you can. Those are sort of the things that need to be done because, unfortunately, if we don't do it very quickly, the outcome is much poorer when an ambulance and trained personnel get there. In 2009, for instance, a lot of people had this. And just by doing that, you can decrease just simple CPR. You can help survivors avoid disability, and up to as many 15% of the time you can help with that. So you can actually help with the survival when you do that. And you really can't do anything that will hurt them.
You didn't mention any mouth-to-mouth resuscitation.
No, no, they don't do much of that anymore.
Okay.
So they do that a little bit, but they pretty much concentrate on chest compressions, mm-hmm. getting a defibrillator there and shocking them. Then if that doesn't work after a while, now if it's a drowning victim and they have fluid in their lungs, yes, okay. you focus on the lungs.
Okay.
Right. But for most people, like go down in an airport, suddenly most of that, they would focus on the CPR, okay. Getting a defibrillator right away. So in the answer to that question, yes, I would take an adult cardiac life support course. The guidelines are much easier. You can only help when you do that. It's not as hard as you think to do chest compressions on somebody. Call for help. They'll teach you how to put a defibrillator on. Those are all useful things. And, you know, it might be that you can help save a life someday.
If there's someone laying on the ground in front of you and you kneel down beside that person, where do you put your hands to do the compression on the chest?
Of course, they go through all this in the course, but the first thing I would say, I'd say a quick prayer to heaven, mm-hmm. okay? Go to the left side of the patient, you know, and start putting, you know, the hands in the appropriate position.
And that's the left side of the person as you're looking at them.
Yes,
okay,
yes. Now, but you know, the bottom line is, just do something,
yeah,
you know,
okay,
come on,
okay.
you know, just don't do any, you know, if you can't get to the left side, if you can only get on the right side, do that. But get on the side of the patient that you're most comfortable. It's not really so much the side. It's putting your hands in the appropriate position over the left lower sternal border where the heart is, beginning compressions. And what compressions does, Charles, that recoil of the heart helps keep some blood with oxygen moving through the body mm-hmm. at some rate. Mm-hmm. It does keep the blood pressure going at some speed. Remember, the blood already has oxygen in it.
Yes.
So if a person's not breathing, there's already a certain amount of oxygen in it. So we want to keep that heart going at some speed that will help keep the blood going until we can try to restore the heart rhythm with the defibrillator.
Okay.
That is the most important thing. And then secondarily, they'll teach you eventually how to get to the airway. But, you know, I don't want to get into all the details because this is not really a course. But the bottom line is to, yes, take that course. It's not that hard. It could save a life. So go do it.
All right. Very good advice from Dr. James Markham, founder, director of HeartWise Ministries. Our time has flown by. We just have a minute left here, Dr. Markham. Any final words of wisdom for us?
No, it's just, you know, if you have more questions, go to our website. There's no bad questions. That's heartwiseministries.org. We get questions from food to how to sleep better. We also have a prayer page. We actually pray for people with specific problems because we know that God can heal in his way. Just go, and if you have questions, get answers. We love to serve you, and we just thank you for taking the time to listen to us today. Go to our website, learn more. That's heartwiseministries.org.
And of course, I hasten to add that you can listen to these programs right there on heartwiseministries.org as well, and share them, link them to your Facebook page or something. If people have a question on a certain subject, these programs are pretty well self-explanatory in their titles and also a little write-up about them. You can find out what it's about and just educate yourself, because like Dr. Markham says, the best prescription is education, and we try to do that at heartwiseministries.org. Dr. Markham, as always, thank you so much.
And thank you so much as well, Charles.
Until next time, listener, this is Charles Mills along with Dr. James Markham inviting you to remain heartwise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.